This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
I'm joined now by Dan Thornton, who is, of course, from the John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. Hello.
Hello.
You're the first author on a science paper that was released in July called A Population of Fast Radio Bursts at Cosmological Distances. So can you tell me what a fast radio burst is?
Well, a fast radio burst is something that was first published in 2007 under the name of the Lorimer Burst. So that was the name of the person who wrote that paper. We've sort of renamed them because we found quite a few more of them, so they need to have a proper name. We went for fast radio burst, kind of like gamma ray burst. They're very narrow, single pulses of radio waves, about a few milliseconds long, that we've discovered with using the Parkes radio dish in Australia.
Okay, so what was it you were searching for initially that sort of led to this discovery?
Well, we found them in our survey called the High Time Resolution Universe Survey, which is primarily for pulsars, but we were also searching for these radio transients. We weren't sure we were going to find them because lots of people thought that perhaps the Lorimer burst was a piece of RFI or radio frequency interference, but we were searching for them. So, yeah, primarily it was for pulsars, but also for radio transients. And so that's what our search pipeline was really looking for.
Okay. Are there any theories as to how these are actually formed? What causes them?
There are some theories, but there's not a lot of data to kind of back up those theories. So a lot of people, even as we speak in the last month or so, there have been quite a few papers people have written about how these may be generated. We think they're probably cataclysmic events, which means they won't repeat. So they're not like a pulsar, probably not something spinning, but something exploding. So they only happen once, or they appear to only happen once.
Whereabouts are they?
Well, that's kind of why the paper's been so interesting, because they appear to come from so far away. So as pulsar astronomers at Jodrell Bank, we basically deal only with things in our own galaxy. We've only ever found pulsars within the Milky Way and globular clusters surrounding the Milky Way. But these appear to come from approximately a million times further away than the size of the Milky Way. So these are what we call cosmologically significant in that. So these radio bursts appear to have come from halfway back to the beginning of the universe. So approximately 7 billion years ago.
That's really far, really long ago.
That is really far.
So are there any counterparts that you see? Because obviously you were looking at one. What frequency were you looking at?
Well, we're looking with the Parkes Radio Telescope, and our survey goes from 1.1 gigahertz to 1.5 gigahertz approximately. So pretty standard sort of radio frequencies. A lot of pulsar astronomy is done at those frequencies. That's hence the reason we do the survey. We have tried to find associated triggers from things like SWIFT, so gamma rays, X-ray transients. SWIFT is a gamma ray telescope, which is a satellite that is searching all the time for gamma ray bursts. And so we may expect that a cataclysmic event like a gamma ray burst may have an associated sort of radio burst, but we haven't seen that, or at least we haven't. It's possible that they happened, but they were too far away for SWIFT to detect, so that's a possibility. But no, we haven't detected any counterpart.
How do you know specifically that they definitely aren't part of the galaxy or from something in the solar system or anything like that?
Well, we use this. Well, the main thing we use is a characteristic called the dispersion. So as radio waves propagate through charged material, free electrons, which actually occur in the interstellar medium, so the space between the stars, the hydrogen is ionized by the light from the stars, so the electrons are free. And that means that the lower frequency radio waves travel slower than the high frequency radio waves. So if a pulse starts at the same time at all frequencies, then by the time it gets to the Earth, it's travelled so far that the lower frequencies arrive slightly later.
So you're looking at all these different frequencies and you see that it's kind of arrives at different times.
Exactly. It spreads out. So you see this characteristic sweep across the observing band, which in our band is about 1 second across our 400 megahertz for these bursts. And we know of around 2,000 pulsars, and we've been able to map out the distribution of the free electrons in our own galaxy. And so for a given direction in our galaxy, we know what the maximum dispersion we might expect from that direction is. And so if we see something with a vastly higher quantity of dispersion in that direction, then there must be some other source of that dispersion. So in the direction of the four bursts that we have in our paper, the Milky Way can only account for about 3 to 6% of the dispersion that we observe. So really, there's an enormous amount of dispersion coming from a different source. And we think that the intergalactic medium, so the space between the galaxies, is also ionized, but there's much less stuff. So there's the density of electrons is much, much lower. So for a given amount of dispersion, you have to go a lot, lot further. And if you do the calculation, the sort of cosmological calculation of how many free electrons there should be, then you can calculate the probable distance, although there are some quite large uncertainties, but it does appear that they are quite far away. But hopefully one of the things we'll be able to do in the future when we find more of these things is if we can associate them to a real galaxy, perhaps an optically identified one, then we can measure the true redshift, and that would really help us to figure out just the density of those electrons between the Earth and that other galaxy.
Cool. How many of them have you actually found?
So the first one was found in... it arrived at the telescope in 2001, it was published in 2007, and then we present four more in this paper, and then actually since this paper there's been a couple more, but I can't talk about those.
But so there's kind of like a handful of them that have been found.
Yeah.
Are they kind of all in the same general area of the sky, or are they all sort of spread out?
Well, we found them in the part of our survey that doesn't point towards the galactic plane. And that's probably one of the reasons that our survey has found them, because pulsar surveys in the past have always concentrated around the Milky Way, because pulsars are located in the Milky Way, so to maximise your return, you concentrate your survey there. But our survey has surveyed the whole sky that's available to Parkes, so everything it can see, and they seem to be randomly distributed. There seems to be no pattern.
So there's no clustering at all that you can see so far?
Not that we can measure, no. They just seem to be... It seems completely random.
Okay. Interesting. Well, how long did these bursts actually last for?
Well, the width of the pulse, they appear to be between 1 and 6 milliseconds. So very, very short. But then the dispersion spreads them out to be about 1 second long across the band. But we can correct for that, so they go down to just a few milliseconds. And so because they're so narrow and they're so bright, you can infer that they probably come from what's called a coherent mechanism. So a bit like how laser light is produced. And this means that you can limit the size of the emission region, so from where they actually come from. So given that they're only a few milliseconds across, we can say that they probably come from a region that's only a few hundred kilometres across.
So really small object.
So they come
from
a really, really compact object. And so that tells us that they probably don't come from something like a supernova, because a supernova would be much larger than that. In general, its scale would be many times the size of that.
So it's a really, really small object, but that can produce something that can be visible billions of light years away.
Yeah, so they're very, very weak when they get to the Earth, but they've got an awful long way. So if you calculate how bright they must be at the source, whatever that may be, they're incredibly bright. They release more energy in a few milliseconds than the sun does in several hundred thousand years in total.
Wow.
So they really are very, very bright.
That's an incredibly bright object.
Yeah.
So you said this is sort of a cataclysmic event. Do you get more than one pulse, or do you literally have to just catch that single pulse?
Well, we haven't seen any repetition. One thing that I'm looking at the moment is whether these could come from soft gamma ray repeater giant flares, which some people think might come from magnetars. So these are basically gamma ray bursts, but they have been seen sometimes. If they're very nearby, you get one burst and then you get repetitions that get weaker and weaker. And people think that these repetitions come from the rotation period of the magnetar. And so if these radio bursts are associated with these kind of SGRs, soft gamma ray repeaters, then maybe we would expect to see, sometimes if they're very nearby, to see those repeats corresponding to the rotation of the magnetar. We haven't seen that yet, but it's possible that the second and third and every other pulse is simply too weak for us to see.
Okay, so given that there's only that one pulse, it's pretty lucky to be able to see them. Do you do a repeating map?
Well, we're basically just tiling the whole sky. So we look at every patch of sky once for about 300 seconds. We're using quite a big radio dish, so our field of view is very small. So in a way it's luck, but in a way it's just looking for a long enough time.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So we can, it's quite an interesting point, is that we've looked for an awful long time with a very, very small field of view, and we've seen a few. So we can calculate what the rate is. They're actually hitting the Earth, even though we miss them because we're simply not looking in the right direction. And we calculate about 10,000 per day.
10,000 of these per day hit the Earth.
From somewhere in the sky, 10,000 of these every day are hitting the Earth. And no one sees them because no one's telescope is... Well, it's unlikely that their telescope is pointing in the right place at the right time.
Wow. That's a lot of those bursts, just every single day, so...
Yeah.
Wow.
Another interesting fact that I worked out for someone else was that Parkes would have to observe for 100,000 years to collect enough energy from fast radio bursts to have the same kinetic energy as a flying mosquito. So,
wow, that's crazy. Yeah, you talked about sort of the future of these fast radio bursts. Kind of, can you tell us a little bit more about any plans that there are at the moment?
Well, yeah, we're developing plans to try and follow up these as quickly as possible, possibly with optical, ground-based optical telescopes and X-ray telescopes, and possibly to see if there's any gamma ray bursts. One of the main things we're working on, actually, is trying to detect these as soon as possible after they happen. So I discovered these bursts in archival data, so they'd actually occurred approximately a year before I found them. What we have running at the moment, and it's brand new, is a detection system that detects them within a few seconds of them happening. So hopefully we can then pass these cues out to other astronomers around the world, and they can then immediately train their telescopes onto the same point in the sky. And hopefully, well, A, we'll be able to find out whether there is an optical counterpart or an X-ray counterpart, and B, those telescopes will be much more accurate in their position estimation. So our field of view with Parkes has several galaxies within it, so maybe tens of galaxies, 10 to 50 galaxies within that field of view. So it's basically impossible for us to tell which galaxy it came from. But with an optical detection, they would be able to say, well, it might be quite difficult to figure out which optical burst it is, but if they can, then they should be able to localize it to a specific galaxy. If we can do that, then we can figure out what the redshift of that galaxy is, and then figure out the baryon content of the universe.
Brilliant. That's awesome. You said that you were working on something that would sort of detect them as they happen. Is that an automatic thing? So it would be a computer program that would kind of flag it?
It's an automatic thing up to a point, but we still need some human intervention, because the radio frequency interference around Parkes can be quite strong.
Mobile phones and stuff?
Mobile phones, there's a radar, there's actually an electric fence that's keeping some sheep in a field that can sometimes cause some kind of interference. So there's some human intervention at the moment, and because it's very, very early days, so basically we haven't put any cues out to other astronomers yet, we want to make sure that we don't cry wolf too many times. So when we put something out, we want to be quite sure that it is what we say it is. So we're not going to let the computer do that just yet.
Yeah, so you need to be absolutely certain.
Yeah. So, but as our software develops, that will eventually be the goal.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for telling us all about these fast radio bursts, and wish you the best of luck for the future of it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.